Welcome to Booked, the panel game that lifts the lid on the sandwich box of literature and goes, ah. Today, we're in Cheltenham at the Everyman's Other Space. We tried the space, but felt more comfy here in the other space. I'd like to dedicate this entire programme to my recently deceased gerbil, Bubble. Bubble the gerbil, somewhere in gerbil heaven, is comforted by the low, distinct murmuring of Radio 4. Heaven is almost like being alive, but with nicer straw, says Bubble, who was always a bit of a philosopher. And our panellists today, the regular maturing cheddars, Miles Keaton and Dilly Keane. And competing for the Everyman for Himself Cup, Moulding Stilton's Matt Thomas and Roger McGough. So let's open the greaseproof paper, cut the crusts off and bite into the first round, fictional children. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a fictional child. All you have to do is describe what's on the card so the others guess it. You can only pass on one, you've only got a minute, and I'm going to be very tough. Mark and Roger, it's your challenge. 1 minute, ready, steady, go.
Wonderland.
Alice. Yep. This is a little peer of the realm, Goldilocks.
Lord Fauntleroy.
Yes, Lord Fauntleroy.
A girl used to run around in the hills, probably Swiss.
Heidi Ho. In a Tower of London, got the heads chopped off.
Kings in the Tower.
Two little ones.
Princes in the Tower.
Tower. Exactly, you got it.
This is a bloke used to hate Captain Hook.
Peter Pan.
Yeah, lovely.
Peter Pan. This was the John Lennon's killer.
Mark Chapman.
An Australian car. Holden Caulfield.
Laurie Lee book.
Cider.
Rosie.
And this is a cartoon character.
Mickey Mouse.
Minnie the Minx.
Time's up, I'm afraid.
Minnie the Minx. Very good.
Minnie the Minx. Well done.
Excellent. Well done.
So, Dilly and Miles, off you go.
Child of the Jungle, who...
Mowgli.
Oh, that's good.
This is... she sat on a tuffet eating her curds.
Little
Miss
Muffet.
Mm-hmm.
A small woman.
Thumbelina.
A little woman. Louisa May.
Oh, God. Thing.
Yes, one of the women, any woman. Name any woman.
Sue. I don't know.
Pass.
Please, sir, can I have some more?
Oliver Twist. Very, very fat boy at school.
Bunter.
Oh, yes.
30 seconds.
He's French, and,
Tintin.
Yes.
Belgian. William's rival, Alf Queem.
Elizabeth Bott. This is, from a German book,
Five seconds.
I think.
No, Emil.
No, it isn't a German book. I don't know. I've given up.
Time's up, I'm afraid.
Oh, I never guessed. That was a really hard one, that was.
You passed on two. The first one, of course, was Amy March from Little Women. That was the small woman.
Oh, I see.
And the last one was Titus Groome.
Yes, well, they couldn't have got that, hadn't they?
There's a wonderful ripple that went round the audience. No, we don't have him in Cheltenham.
Thank God there's no scoring in this, that's all I say.
And now, beginnings and endings. Two of our panel have been elected by secret ballot to rewrite the beginnings and endings of classic books parodying the writer or the story. Mark, your card was drawn first, and you got The Bridges of Madison County by Robert James Waller, a tear-jerking brief encounter one summer in Iowa made into a blockbuster movie with Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep.
Robert Kincaid's battered truck rolled into Iowa in 63. He was looking to photograph the covered bridges of Madison County. It was by chance that he was lost and by chance that he came to ask Francesca directions. She stood on the porch looking at him as he got out of the dusty truck. He was lean and hard. The air beat an airless heat. Shyly and to herself, she noticed there was no breeze to talk of. Why, it must be the stranger that's making my nipples stand up. She blushed like a schoolgirl and pouted like a woman. Looking back, she knew then that this was the day her life was to change, the day she let her feelings feel again. Back in 63, no one had feelings. She had just grown up, fallen in love, got married, had kids, loved them, wasn't in love with her husband, but she loved him just the same. And now she stood like a ripe and ready fruit, waiting, waiting, waiting to feel. Hi, I'm sorry to trouble you, but I'm looking for the covered bridges. I'll show you a covered bridge if you want. Why can't men be lovers and poets, warriors with romantic verse that understood that a woman wanted to be held in the animal power of passion and recited to with tender verses as well? She thought as she looked at the man who was hours away from being the cowboy on the drifting plains of her heart. Do you like poetry? He said. She remembered that moment forever. She would remember till the day she died those words that flowed with rugged charm and purity. And sometimes when she was alone, she'd say out those words. She'd say them out loud, the words that had captivated that hot afternoon, the words ringing with life once and once again as she said over and over again, there once was a lady from Bow. I've actually got an ending to it as well. Francesca's children had scattered her ashes by the covered bridge. Now they stood in horror as they read her diaries. In them, she detailed her lifelong love for Robert Kincaid and the fact that they had both denied the flourishing of that love in mutual silence. Any normal child reading that would say, "Wow, Mum got laid by a hippie." Or, "Can you believe that Mum, who was married to a farmer, had far-out cosmic sex with a wild-eyed photographer who offered her the world, and then she decided to stay with Dad?" But no, these children found tenderness and decency in their mother's tale. And in deference to that, they sold the story to a best-selling writer who turned it into a blockbuster.
Right, Miles, you were given Pilgrim's Progress, John Bunyan's classic allegory of the Christian way of life. So read us your new beginning and ending.
There was a man called Christian who set out on a long journey to find his destination. But before he could depart, a man whose name was Publishing came to him and said, "Look, I hear you're going on a long and dangerous journey, so I will pay you to write a book of your adventures and your brush with death in the forests of New Guinea and your close call in the gay ghettos of California, okay?" And Christian said to Mr. Publishing, "But what if I have no adventures?" Then another man, whose name was Ghostwriter, said, "Don't worry, dear, we'll make them up for you." And Christian brushed aside their temptation and said he would not take their money. And the man who was called Publishing said, "I know your little game. You're waiting for the man called Television Travel Doc to come along and make you a better offer. Well, you'll be lucky, because they've had their fingers burnt once too often. You're on your own, sweetie." And Christian found himself alone once again. In the end, and after many adventures in which he did battle with Mr. French Lorry Driver and encountered Mr. Michael Palin in the jungle, and after he'd been through such places as the Slough of Underinsurance and the City of Lost Hotel Reservations and the Valley of Bag Snatching, he came at last to the celestial city, Manchester. And there the people did mistake his red scarf for that of a Liverpool supporter and did beat him to death.
And now, sound effects. I'm going to play some sounds which make up the title or the feel or the plot of a book. And all you've got to do is guess which book it is. And listen carefully, because all the sounds are relevant. Mark and Roger.
There was a lot of kicking the bucket there, wasn't there?
Well, it wasn't actually kicking the bucket. Things were falling into the bucket.
Things were dropping into the bucket, right.
Could it have been heads?
No, it was...
No, not severed heads.
It was actually fruit.
Fruit. Oh, yes. Bucket. Yes, fruit, it was the one, John Steinbeck. Would it be Steinbeck?
Oh,
yes.
A grape, Grapes of Wrath.
Grapes of Wrath,
Grapes
yes.
of Wrath, yes.
How did you arrive at that, then?
Well, you know, Route 66, all the setting up the scene, and the place and the time, and then the grapes falling into the bucket.
Did you get...
How do you know? Do you know soft fruit sounds that drop into buckets?
Was that hobby of mine?
Miles and Dilly, here's one for you.
But I thought...
It's a good hotel guide. was that a hammer or anvil at the beginning?
Yes, hammering and sounds of filing metal.
Filing metal?
There was wind as well.
Harsh wind.
Not a bit of wedding music at one point.
Very important.
Oh.
Somebody's a blacksmith and gets married.
I'll see if I can pass it over.
Was it? This is a wild shot in the dark.
It's a wild shot.
Was it the Count of Monte Cristo?
No.
The famous blacksmith story.
Well, no. It doesn't necessarily mean a blacksmith.
Was it the man in the iron mask?
No. Great Expectations. Yes, it was.
Wow.
From the audience.
Wow.
Ah, that was the "but I thought" bit, wasn't it? Suddenly it's all revealed.
And it was Magwitch.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
And now, a brand new round, Blockbuster. Sacred text and the literary canon are blurbed up for the mass market. In this round, our panellists have to write the back cover "Come On" for the paperback version so it's fit for the airport bookstores. So, Mark, what's your hype?
This is The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, which you're probably familiar with. There's a bit in it that's used quite a lot of sort of like wedding ceremonies without God, and it's all quite spiritual and lovely. Ever wondered what's it all about? Why are we here and what do we do? Then this is the book for you. The Prophet spills the cosmic beans on why we're here and what to do. Find that you too can find spiritual truth, harmony and peace. And pithy little quotes you can use at dinner parties. Guaranteed to make you find the spiritual side of your life. Guaranteed to make you find the true things in life that really matter. Guaranteed to make you less materialistic or your money back.
So, Miles, what's your blockbuster?
The Odyssey. The Odyssey, the story of a Mediterranean sailing holiday that became a nightmare. I'm just going for a sail with the lads, Odysseus told his wife. Little did he know that everything that could go wrong on a holiday would go wrong. He had such a bad time that when he came back from the holiday 10 years later, only his dog recognized him. Read The Odyssey and you'll never go Club Med again.
And Roger, what's your tome?
Oh, mine was the Churchill's History of the Second World War. Take no prisoners in your battle to get a copy of this book. The Second World War, the follies, the triumphs, the blood and the gore, unbiased, impartial and British to the core. An invasion of pages, a blitz of words from our siren-suited man in the bunker. The next best thing to actually being there. Rub shoulders with Stalin, goose-step with Hitler, push Roosevelt. If volumes could... if volumes could speak, this speaks volumes. Get it? Get it.
And Dilly, sell me your book.
It's actually a play, but never mind. It's been rewritten as a book, and it's called The Doll's House, A Doll's House by Heinrich Ibsen. Cold, dark, endless winter, a non-stop diet of whale blubber. 19th century Oslo has little to offer a spirited young wife in an ivory tower. Nora Helmer, sexpot mother of three, is a trophy wife with a talent for dancing the tarantella. We follow Nora's turbulent odyssey as her debts pile up and her past comes back to haunt her. Will she truly discover the woman within? Can she actually have it all? Should she stay with her husband? Or should she follow her dream and set up a fishing business with a woman's group in Trondheim? Sexy, challenging, and a thoroughly good read, Maureen Lipman. Profoundly beautiful. Profoundly beautiful and utterly heartwarming. Heinrich Ibsen is a writer of terrific power and passion, Maeve Binchy. I laugh till my gussets melted, Kathy Lett.
And now to Vox Pops, familiar territory. Members of the public telling us their recollections of particular stories, but which books are they describing? That's what our panellists have to guess. But before we begin, a note of warning. Some of our public might be telling fibs. So Roger and Mark, listen to this.
It was a popular board game of the 1970s.
The main man is fine, upstanding.
It's a great role to play.
Advertised with the slogan,
potentially violent.
But not if you're a woman.
And as it turns out, actually violent.
Because you just die. There's no meat in the role.
A minute to learn, a lifetime to master.
Well, he seems to feel the need to destroy.
Everyone starts wanting to know the motive.
First against his wife.
And no one can ever give one.
Finally, against himself.
So it's a board game.
1970s.
If you know the board game, then it's easy.
All right, I'll go.
Right.
So, board game involving murder. Was it made into a film?
I think there has been films of it.
There's been films of it. Did it star Laurence Olivier and Michael Caine?
No.
No, right, wrong track.
More of a play than a book, really.
More of a play than a book.
I'll pass it over.
Don't.
Right. What about the audience? Any ideas? Yeah, it is a hard one. Othello.
Oh, there was a game.
I see.
Was there a game called Othello?
Yes, there was. We used to play it in Barnsley all the time.
Well, he never played it in South London.
Miles and Dilly, try this one.
The heroine is very plainly dressed and she has a bit of a psycho journey to make.
At least a couple of unhappy marriages.
It is very long. A letter gets taken by a verbose and sycophantic blackmailer.
One of the heroines is very short-sighted.
Seems to devote all her time to writing out things.
I've tried reading several other books by this author and I just can't get on with them.
It is very long. He just picks it up as a random bit of paper and it's the crucial letter winding up in the flask.
Virginia Woolf said that this was one of the few English novels that had been written for grown-ups.
Represents a period of social change.
Missed opportunities.
Radical politics.
Doing the right thing.
It is very long.
The treasure house of detail but an indifferent whole.
And the last bit's a quote from Henry James.
A letter from a blackmailer?
Lots of letters.
Woman kept saying it was very long.
Very long, yes.
It's English?
It's English, yeah.
Is it George Eliot?
It is.
Is it Middlemarch?
It is! Oh! So let's move on to a round in which the characters from one novel jump into the story of another. Academics would call it postmodernism. We call it jumping the plot. Roger, who crossed the floor of the house for you?
I was thinking of Christmas Carol, because by Charles Dickens, and into the plot came Raymond Briggs' Father Christmas. And we have a star cast here. Bob Cratchit, Miles. Mrs. Cratchit and Tiny Tim, the voice of them all, Dilly. And good old Father Christmas, Mark. It was 3 o'clock on Christmas Day, as Bob Cratchit and his family listened, as they always did, to the Queen's speech. When it was over, Bob Cratchit crossed the ill-furnished room and closed the window.
"Praise the Lord, that young Victoria has a voice like a foghorn,"
said Mrs. Cratchit.
"Indeed,"
said her husband, and taking the poker, riddled the dying embers in the hearth.
"Ah, anyone for the last roasted cockroach?"
"Let Tiny Tim have it," said Master Peter, selflessly. Everybody agreed.
"God bless us, everyone,"
cried Tim, and snatched the burnt offering. Bob Cratchit smiled.
"We may be as poor as doornails, but we're as happy as church mice."
"Amen,"
said his good wife, and slipping on her apron, went into the kitchen to serve Christmas dinner.
"Do we have a goose this year?"
asked Tiny Tim. His father gently took his withered hand and replied in a voice that was tremulous.
I'm afraid not, Tim. Ebenezer Scrooge has laid me off without a penny. This year we're having holly berries on toast with steamed mistletoe.
His children smiled bravely.
But worse still, there will be no presents this Christmas.
Just then, there was an explosion in the hearth. A thud, an oath, followed by a cloud of soot that enveloped the room. Mrs. Cratchit came running in from the kitchen.
Lordy, lordy, what can it be?
When the smoke had cleared and the soot settled, there in front of the fireplace stood Father Christmas.
Blooming oldie worldy cold fires.
He muttered.
Sorry I'm late. I took a left at the wrong century.
The Cratchits could only stare in open-mouthed amazement.
Don't suppose you've got a little tot of whiskey to warm the cockles of the old... No, don't suppose you have. Anyway, let's see what we've got in the gift department.
As Santa bent over to rummage in the bulging sack, he pooped.
Oh, pardon me, ladies. Too many blinking mince pies. Now, what have we got here? Couple of video games for the big lad, Barbie dolls, CDs for the young ladies, for Tiny Tim, we've got an Arsenal away strip. No, maybe not. For the good lady, a non-stick Chinese wok. No, it doesn't go under the bed, missus. And for the master of the house, an electric shaver, mains rechargeable, that's it, that's me done, I'm off. Blooming Dickensian Christmas.
As good as his word, Santa squeezed himself up into the chimney like a fat ribbon of red and white striped toothpaste. The Cratchit family gathered round the consumer goods piled up on the floorboards and looked upon them in awe and amazement.
Isn't this the merriest Christmas ever?
Said Bob.
God bless us, everyone,
cried Tiny Tim.
So Dewey, who leapt about for you?
Mrs. Danvers, who is the housekeeper in Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, enters the plot of Private Lives by Noel Coward. And a multi-talented cast will take many parts. Roger will take the part of the minstrel band. And the part of Mrs. Danvers, taken by Mark Thomas. And Mark and I will play Sybil and Elliot, the newlyweds.
Miles and I.
Do you mean Miles?
Oh!
It's always been Mark, and Mark. Never me. Well,
I told you before, Miles, just walk away from it.
And Miles and I will play Elliot and Sybil, the newlyweds. Cocktail, darling.
Oh, Chin Chin.
Listen, Ellie, the minstrel band are playing our song. Do-da, do-da, going to sing all night.
I didn't know that was our song.
Oh, it is now. Oh, I'm so happy.
Are you, darling?
Yes. Are you?
Yes, terribly, terribly happy.
We're going to be happy always, aren't we?
I should coke her.
Oh, I'm a silly old romantic. But then, this is my first marriage.
Well, that's all very well. We must admit there were other, how should I say it, other admirers before me. Harry, Larry, and Willie.
Yes, very big, Willie. But never mind that now. It's you I love, Ellie. And I do so want to make you happy. Happier than you ever were before. You do love me more than your first wife, don't you?
Well, it's just different, that's all.
Different? I don't think I quite like the sound of that.
Oh, don't quibble, Sybil.
Gosh, Possum's in a bit of a mood. His little Sybil will have to work her magic, won't she, and whisper sweet nothings into his shell like yar.
Don't nibble, Sybil.
Oh.
And especially don't dribble, Sybil.
Gosh, if you're going to be cross, I have half a mind to get terribly, terribly drunk.
Do, and I shall go down to the bar and do exactly the same.
Ellie, come back. The band are playing our other song. Oh.
Thoughtful of them to play that, wasn't it?
Who are you?
My name is Mrs. Danvers. I'm Mr. De Winter's housekeeper at Mendeley.
Mendeley? Did you get the band to play that tune?
On the road to Mendeley. Of course.
Oh, but what the dickens are you doing here?
Not Dickens, De Maurier, actually. And I might ask the same of you.
I'm on honeymoon.
I know.
How do you know?
Because Mr. De Winter asked me to air the bed linen, wash the net curtains, and scour out the kitchen cupboards.
Well, that's a relief. They were fearfully grubby when I saw them last.
I also took the first Mrs. De Winter's Reading dress to Sketchley's.
Not Rebecca's wedding dress to Sketchley's?
Yes, it come up a treat, it did, God blimey, strike a light, Governor.
Why are you speaking in that strange way?
Because I am a servant.
Oh.
But even a servant could see that you'll never make him happy.
You have no right to say that. Elliot loves me very, very much.
Then why is he down in the bar doing the rumba with an ex-Adagio dancer from Ellesmere Port and drinking rum and pep?
Oh, I don't know.
It's pointless, you know, trying to live up to Rebecca. You'll never be her equal at the long jump or anything else for that matter. Why don't you just give up now? Look at the view. It looks so beautiful in this damned moonlight, especially from this high balcony. You could just jump now. Go on, jump. Why don't you? He'll always love Rebecca.
Rebecca?
Yes, Rebecca.
But my husband's first wife was called Imelda.
Imelda?
No, Imelda.
Either way, he's lying through his teeth.
Oh, in that case, I have nothing to live for. Goodbye.
Oh. Ah, it's you, Mrs. Denders. Everything sorted, then?
Yes. Sybil has just fallen through the atrium and is lying dead on the floor of the hotel lobby. Look.
Oh, gosh, yes. Very dead, Sybil.
Right. Now, did you remember to get her life insurance sorted out?
Of course, darling. Strange how potent cheap insurance is.
You know, I've got the strangest feelings. We're going to be terribly, terribly happy.
And to finish off, I'd like our gang to think up lines that fictional characters are least likely to say. And it's Liberty Hall, so let rip and give it to us. Anybody got any ideas?
I've got the man in the iron mask. Least likely to say, "Dear Santa, what I would really like this year are some fridge magnets for my face." I've got another one. It's a different character. This is Oedipus, least likely to say, "Dad!"
Well, I've got Robinson Crusoe. Least likely to say, "Night all." And Long John Silver, pull the yellow one.
Scarlet Pimpernels. Hello, it's me.
This is one. Cor blimey days, Gav. Dad, you talked to me about that Eliza Doolittle. I spent bleeding mouths with her. And look what happened. Professor Henry Higgins, yes.
I've got Spider-Man. Flyman's dropped in for supper.
Well, it's time to finish now with a sad little poem to Squeak, the other gerbil that didn't die. To Squeak. Squeak the gerbil was bereft after bubble burst, so I stuck a radio in his cage. Radio 4, just off the station. The comedy and the firmly held opinions reminded him of bubble. So it just remains me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. Books was researched by Kate Withers, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobst, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye.